going to assume we're streaming, and we're going to come out and see Thomas. Here you go, Thomas.
Really?
Yeah.
It says live.
It does.
Hey, that's pretty cool. If you are tuning in to our live stream podcast on Facebook and other mediums, thank you for being here. This is Inside Bassmaster, and we're coming to you live, actually live, atop our twin towers at Bassmaster headquarters, inside our palatial offices, nestled deep inside our quiet, comfy studio at Bassmaster. I'm Thomas Allen. Co-hosting me, as he usually does, is the man who is the vice president of all things digital at Bassmaster, Jim Sexton. Thanks for being here, Jim.
Yeah, great to be here.
And the man that you probably don't get to see very often, he's very important to what we're doing, Chris Mitchell. He's managing the controls, keeps this thing going, does a tremendous job. He is undervalued. He's underpaid, Jim Sexton. I just want to write that down.
I don't know about that.
This is wonderful.
And our special guest this week is the Bassmaster Rookie of the Year, Drew Cook, who has got his face perfectly positioned inside the Big Bite Baits logo. Ironically, by some teeth. We're going to get into that. He's actually in Eufaula, Alabama at the Big Bites headquarters. Drew, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you all. I appreciate it.
So we're going to dig into your story. We want to hear the history of Drew Cook. And obviously, one of the more famous stories is how you took a tungsten weight in the face and had to tough through it. I'm just so amazed by that. I really get bothered by tooth and finger injuries. Like that's where I can't deal with that. I'll pass out. But we're going to dig into that a little bit. But before we do, talk to me a little bit. Give us a little bit of your history as an angler. When did you realize you wanted to be a professional angler? When did you realize you loved fishing? Take it away.
Growing up on Lake Talquin, I always fished, you know, whether it be off the dock or with my dad or whatever on the lake. So I always loved fishing, and I can tell you the exact moment that I wanted to be a professional fisherman was I was watching the 2000 Bassmaster Classic, and whenever I saw those guys getting paid to go fishing, I was like, yeah, sign me up. That's what I want to do.
The 2000 and, Classic, you know, who won that?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you.
I don't remember.
It was a dramatic moment. Jim's going to look it up, and he'll refresh us.
But it didn't matter, right? Getting paid. So
you know, we should know that. How do we not have that memorized?
2000. It's almost 20 years ago.
It is.
It's not Davey Hyde, is it?
That was 99, I think. We're looking it up. But, hey, but see, those moments, though, they stick with you. And I remember my first classic the same way. There's just something about the energy, seeing the people, and watching somebody make a living doing that. But clearly you had to kind of develop that skill, or if you really had that dream, you had to take it to the next step. So how did you transition from, hey, I love to fish, to I want to make my living this way?
Well, We started the Quincy Junior Bassmasters whenever I was, I would say probably around that 12-year-old age. So there really wasn't the high school and the college stuff at that point in time yet. So whenever we started fishing, you know, as a club and in the state championships and stuff like that. It kept growing and growing and growing to where by the time I was a senior in high school, you know, there was high school fishing. And so I did that all the way through. And then whenever I graduated from high school, I went to college to fish. And as I was fishing in college, I fished the nation all the way through and just trying to get to the classic. You know, any which way I could, whether it be college, nation, opens. And I planned on fishing the opens to make it to the elites, but I was going to wait until I graduated from college. I was going to get my degree and make sure that was all done before, because I didn't want to, you know, mess around and qualify my sophomore year of college and then, you know, be 20-something hours short of a degree. So whenever I graduated college, I went all in the opens, fished both divisions, and was fortunate enough to qualify my first year. And that just kind of, it still really is kind of like surreal that, you know, I made a plan like 12 years ago and it freaking worked. You know, it went right.
You know, sometimes sometimes having a plan is halfway there.
That's kind of like this podcast. I mean, we have a plan for this to work, and by George,
right,
it's working.
I've got a couple questions for you about your early days. Maybe fill in a few gaps. What I'm showing from the story that Mark Hicks wrote about you early in the year is that you fished on your high school team, maybe just that last year, but won the Bassmaster High School Florida State Championship.
Yes, sir.
Was that an individual award or was it a team award?
It was individual at that point in time. You know, but I fished that for 4 years, and I never could win it. It was like one of those things that it just wasn't going to happen. I came in second twice, third once,
wow,
and then finally in the fourth year, you know, I won it, and they just kind of put a check mark in that box.
Yeah, that's great. And so you went to Florida State, fished in college. It looks like you studied criminology and entrepreneurship, which is a pretty interesting combination. So does that set you up to be a very entrepreneurial-minded criminal, or how does that work?
there's all kinds of combinations it can be. And, you know, the criminology thing was you know, gonna try maybe if I wanted to be a game warden or you know, something along those lines. And then the entrepreneurship was for fishing. For, you know, I got a taste of marketing, got a taste of business, got a taste of everything in that entrepreneurship degree to help me with my brand and,
wow,
you know, selling myself as a professional fisherman.
You know, he,
so it was
what a great
it is a good combo major. But does he not seem to fit the bill of a intimidating conservation officer, game warden?
Yeah, I mean, I
could see him being a little growly early in the morning, yeah, and be like, look, you guys can't be shooting deer out of a truck while it's moving. That's not cool,
right?
And you're all going to jail.
So you graduated from college and you said I believe you took a job in construction so that you could fish.
Well, I worked all through high school and college in the construction industry, and so that's what I did for the opens. I worked and fished the opens.
That gave you some flexibility, and you said I'm going to give it a year, see if I can make the elites, right?
Yep, I said I was going to give it 1 year, and if I didn't qualify but I made enough money to fish him again the next year, I would fish him again the next year. But if I didn't, it was kind of,
wow,
that was it.
Well, hey, wow, as we're going here, I got to interject. We are doing this live. This is actually happening as you're watching it, if you're on the stream. And right now we're what, about 9 o'clock Central Time on the Bassmaster Facebook page. So if you have any questions for Drew or Chris Mitchell, especially, he's got a lot of questions that he can answer too. If you want to know how to do a podcast flawlessly and seamlessly, he'll off-field those questions. But
it's very exciting.
Chris may interject once in a while with a question, right, Drew? And I don't want to get us too far ahead in a chronological order of what we're doing, but we did get a question from Yamaha. They wanted to know if you and the other Bassmaster rookie, Patrick Walters, had any bets going into the season. Do you have something set up for that?
Yeah. So whenever we were at the Texas Fest, you know, me and Walters were in like 3 or 4 points of each other. We'd been kind of trading off Rookie of the Year and Angler of the Year at that point. And we made a bet, whoever won Rookie of the Year would wash the other one's boat on live camera for everybody to see.
Wow.
So how did you mess up your boat so he had to clean it? I would totally have made it worse than necessary.
Oh, I haven't done it yet. It's going to be really good. Like, I'm probably going to, after a good rain, take it down a dirt road and, you know, get it nice and muddy.
That's a great idea. So let's move into did you go through some of the opens results, Jim? Did you have some of those? Because he did say his first year.
Right. I have one last question for your college time. You had a you know, a very life hard thing that happened to you in college, and that blew up your world. Do you mind telling us about that?
My senior year in college, I guess it was the beginning of the last semester, my mom was killed. She was hit by a car. She was training for a triathlon. And So that kind of, like, really just kind of threw me for a loop, you know. And that was in February that happened. So I had, it was about a year from when that happened to the first open. And it probably took me a year to get back where I needed to be, you know, and to be able to fish like I should. So that, but I mean, during the tournaments or anything like that, you know, on the water, any problems that I've ever had, I could, you know, get away from at, you know, fishing, you know, on the water. And so that's, I just kind of did that. And, you know, it helped me a lot there.
Well, for people who are looking and seeing Drew's career and how he's had a plan and it's all gone really, really well, just wanted folks to know that, you know, it wasn't all roses for Drew during that time, that he had a really difficult circumstance. And we have seen your father at a lot of the elite tournaments mm-hmm. this year, and it looks like he's been a, you know, continued great support for you.
Oh yeah, you know, he's a great dad, honestly. But you know, like whenever your kid says he wants to be a astronaut or a, you know, a professional football player or something, you're like, well, you can do it. Yeah, okay, you know, he'll end up being an accountant or something like that. So whenever I said I wanted to be a professional fisherman, he was like, you can do it, you know, if as long as you do it. And he helped me and was very supportive of, you know, of my choices with what I was doing. And I mean, dude, I'm not gonna lie, I busted my butt to get to where I am. And like, I didn't have a normal high school or college, you know, life like a lot of kids do. You know, my Friday nights were getting ready for tournament Saturdays, or, you know, tying jigs, you know, looking at maps, anything like that. I wasn't really that guy that was, you know, out partying or anything like that. I missed a bunch of football games in high school. I was focused on what I needed to do, and I wasn't going to let a lot of that get in my way.
Well, it's that kind of dedication. This career path, and whether you work at Bassmaster or you fish on the trail, there's a baseline passion you have to have for the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not occur without a level of dedication. And we all got to be a little bit crazy to stay up late on a Friday night and rig tackle and get the boat ready and then get up before the crack of dawn to be out fishing the next day for 12 hours. You know, there's a lot of dedication that comes mm-hmm. to that, and it shows in numbers. And
right.
If you were to look at my numbers, it's incredible. It'd blow your mind, Jim Sexton. If you were to really crunch all of the numbers I have put in on that's not even true at all, but Drew's numbers, you have spent right. time crunching those numbers.
That's right.
And this is what's pretty impressive. For a guy who is the rookie of the year, has a degree, he's got 1 year in the elites, 1 year in the opens.
Right. No, it's impressive. Let's look at your numbers real quick, Drew. So you fished 20 Bassmaster tournaments as a pro. That's the opens and the elites. And out of that, you finished in the money 15 times. All right. So that's an in the money percentage, which Thomas and I keep track of 75%. You've been in the money 75%. And a man can make a living.
That's right.
You know, doing that well. So your best finishes, second place at the 2018 Red River Central Open. You had a third place in the 2018 Kissimmee Eastern Open. And then you've had five top 10 finishes, including those two. But then this year on the elites at Cayuga, Lake Fork, and Hartwell, and we'll talk a little bit more about those. Your first tournament as a pro fishing a bass tournament was 2015 mm-hmm. on Lake Seminole, mm-hmm. and you had a 23rd place finish, very respectable there. Your second tournament as a bass pro then was 2018. That was the Eastern Open at Kissimmee. You finished third there, which we mentioned. So off to a really good start with those opens. Let's look at your elite year, your rookie season as an elite angler.
We need to point this out. So he did win Rookie of the Year, but for a good portion of the season,
right,
he also led the Toyota Bassmaster Angler of the Year race.
Feels like it was about a third of the year.
It does. We talked about him quite a bit. I know he didn't win that, but that's an impressive start to a career.
Finished seventh.
Yeah, that's big.
Finished seventh, Rookie of the Year, and finished seventh in the elites. And so let's go through your finishes for 2018 on the Elite Series, starting at the St. John Rivers. And tell us just a little bit about each one of these, any highlights or lowlights for you out of these tournaments. St. John's, you finished 18th.
Yeah, before we do that, I want to go back to that AOI stuff. That, like, I had an appreciation for AOI. I understood that, you know, you had to have a really good year, you know, to win AOI. But I lost AOI in 2 days.
Mm.
2 days of fishing cost me AOI.
And $100,000.
Volatile it is. You know, that's how important every day is. You know, the third day at Ten Killer and the first day at St. Clair, that was, you know, but so yeah, we can go back to the St. John's River.
We're gonna revisit that.
We feel like Thomas and I talk about this all the time. We feel like every guy, you know, let's say in the top 10 or top 15 or something like that, can point to a day or 2 days or a fish or an equipment problem,
mm-hmm,
and say, I could have won it if X.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, and this year in particular, it was such a tight race.
That's right.
You know, it doesn't get serious until you get to about, I don't know, three, four tournaments left, where it really starts. And this year, it was just tight all the way down.
It was tight. In fact, we believe it's the tightest season-ending Angler of the Year race that we've had in Elite Series history.
That's right.
Because it was down to four guys on the last day, literally, yeah, that had a shot,
I mean,
mathematically.
Yeah. The last few hours of the day.
So when you do fish that many tournaments in a year at the top level of bass fishing, the amount of pressure and the ability to narrow it down to 2 days, and I'm sure if you looked at those days, there's probably a decision you made each of those days that may have helped or may have hurt where you stood. So, I mean, it's really neat to look at that and say, look, these days, something happened.
So, Ten Killer first. You finished 28th there. What happened there that hurt your chances?
I didn't get much time to practice there. I got, you know, a little piece of a day. But I don't think I made a bad decision. Like, and it was a really weird day. You know, I was getting my teeth kicked in, but I was calm all day long and never lost it. The wheels never fell off. I mean, never. And that was, I mean, it, at 1 o'clock, I was like, it's going to happen. You know, I'm still calm and cool. You know, it'll happen, you know, in the last 10 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that, whatever. But it just never did.
Yeah.
You know, I would have liked to have had some more time to where I could have, you know, maybe had a little spotted bass deal that I could go catch, you know, 6 pounds, and then, you know, 6 pounds would have done me a whole lot of good there. You know, I would have been, you know, maybe 3 or 4 points out of AOI going into St. Clair, but,
and
you know,
so
it is what it is.
So then St. Clair, you said one day there hurt you. Was it your first day?
Yeah, first day.
Okay.
I learned a lot there.
There were some big waves on that first day. I can attest to that.
It was a rough day for everybody.
It was a very rough day. And
except
unfortunately,
for Seth Fider.
I had a camera guy that was his first day on the job. And I drove him about 70 miles in 20 mile an hour east winds on Lake St. Clair.
We wondered why he quit.
Yeah, I was about to say, it might have been his last day on the job.
Yeah. But yeah, I had some fish up shallow and that were really big ones that I thought I could probably win the event on. And it took me, you know, an hour and some change to get down there, and it wasn't happening. So I had to go to a backup plan, and it took me an hour and some change to get there too.
Wow.
But you know, I caught a 4 1/4 on my second cast of the morning. So I got my butt kicked all the way, started fishing, won Rookie of the Year on my second cast, and I was like, well, we can you know, we can get it done down here today. And then it, that water just it muddied up, and they just weren't cooperating down there.
I think Chris has a question for you.
Yeah, from Justin Brouillard.
Hey, we never say his name right. He's a friend of ours, actually. Yeah. He shot pictures for us up north when we were there. Hey, Justin.
Does Drew do any deer hunting in the off season? And here's the important second part of the question. If so, is he a better hunter than Thomas Allen?
What? Wait a minute. I was just giving him props. Let's see.
I do a good bit of deer hunting. That's kind of what I've been messing with, you know, getting stands ready and all that stuff. We had a bad hurricane down here last year, kind of wiped all of our stuff out, so we're just still trying to get back together. But I mean, I can catch and kill anything. I don't know if I'm better than Thomas Allen.
You probably are. It's not that hard, but thank you, Justin. Now we were immersed in some important conversation.
We go back to the beginning of the year, first elite tournament. You're in your home state. Did you have much experience at the St. John?
You know, not really.
Okay.
I've been there, you know, a couple of times. I've never been there, honestly, I've never been there during the spawn, which is, you know, crazy, because that's like the best place to go when they're bedding. And I love bed fishing, but I've never had to go down there for it. So that one, and the St. John's was my proudest tournament that I've had this year. I'm very proud of that one. It set the tone for the year down there.
Why are you particularly proud of that one?
After day one, I think I was in like 61st place. Mm. Just getting reamed. So I bailed and made some adjustments on day two, you know, caught 25 pounds. And then backed it up with another 20 on day three and jumped all the way up to 18th. And that just got the ball rolling for the year. The confidence was there. And after that, I just rolled with it and never stopped.
How important is confidence to being a successful tournament angler?
More important than you could ever imagine.
You gotta believe.
Yeah. What was your reaction to that crowd at Palatka?
Man, you know, it was still kind of like, I actually made it. But that third day, whenever I walked out from behind that stage and there was people on the roofs of buildings behind the weigh-in. And there was just nothing but people out there. It was awesome. I mean, I can't even explain, you know, what it was like.
We understand. We had the same reaction.
Yeah,
it was the best crowds we
ever had there.
And we walked out and were just blown away with that. And
lots of support.
It was particularly great support for the anglers. All right, so we go to the second tournament of the year. It's back-to-back. It's Lake Lanier, north of Atlanta. You had a 12th place finish there. So you're on a little bit of a roll at that point.
Yeah, you know, had the ball rolling and just kept with that, you know, making the good decision, trusting your gut. It turned out after the first day of the tournament, me and my roommate were sharing the same area of, you know, fishing. And so on the second and third day, you know, he was leading after the second day. So I gave him, you know, that whole area, and I just went fishing, made really good decisions, and, you know, I only lost one fish that whole tournament, and it wouldn't have made a bit of difference. But, you know, that one really hurt. So let me just tell you, the third day, I think I was in ninth place, something like that. So I knew I needed like around 15 pounds to make the top 10. Well, I was, you know, fishing through the day, and right about the time I had to go in to weigh in, I had about 13 something. I was like, you know, it could be close, you know, if they stumbled a little bit. And I'm running up the river to go to weigh in, and I've got 46 seconds left. And I stop and I pick up a crankbait and I throw it at a rock and I catch the biggest fish I've caught all week in coal.
Wow.
So whenever I put it in coal and I'm heading to, you know, to check in, I'm like, oh, I made my first top 10. And then I would think I was like a 2 or 3 ounces short. It was gut wrenching. It hurt so bad.
He stopped, made one cast, and just missed it. That's
not bad.
That's something else.
Well, so your year keeps getting better because you started out 18th at St. John's. You go to 12th at Lanier, and then you finish 4th at Hartwell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like better, better, and better.
Keep climbing.
How did that tournament work out for you? How did you do so well there?
You know, Hartwell, I had it circled on the map or on the calendar. I was chomping at the bits for that one. I knew it was going to be a sight fishing deal, and that's my favorite way to, you know, to fish. That's what I'm good at. And that tournament in particular, in practice, it was really weird. It got really cold right before it got down there, like into the 40s. The water temperature was, you know, hanging around like 53 or 54 degrees the first day we got there. So it kind of scared me a little bit, but there were still fish on bed. So, well, I can make it work. But down in the south end of that lake where there weren't any fish bedding yet because the water temperature was still a little bit cooler than the rest of the lake, I saw, you know, quite a few fish up there cruising. And by the time the second day of the tournament rolled around, those fish had pulled up and I was able to have all that by myself pretty much because nobody else, you know, they didn't see them in practice on bed and they didn't, you know, there was fish everywhere in the lake spawning except for, you know, right there around the dam. So that's kind of what I did to stand out there.
Very good. So we moved from there east in South Carolina and go to Winyah Bay. And I don't want to spoil the surprise, but it's the only tournament of the year where you did not make the cut. But let me say this. He had a 39th place finish. And when that's your worst finish of the year.
That's the toughest fishery on the calendar.
I mean, you look at Chris Zaldane's year and, you know, what, three second place finishes, just a fantastic year. But he finished in the 60s, I think, I think it was at Winyah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, typically everybody has a bad tournament, or more than one.
That's right.
And yet your worst finish was 39th.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the third event that I fished at Winyah Bay. So I kind of knew what to expect. And every time I've been there, it's burned me. Like, unbelievable. But the first time I fished there, you know, was the Bass Nation. And going into the final day, I think I was in second or third place and had a, you know, really good shot to win it. And it burned me. And then last time that we were there for the Bass Nation, I think the year before, it just I could never get the timing deal right. So, but we could never go to the Cooper River down there. So that really threw a kink into everything. But that tournament, I was leading AOI going into it, leading Rookie of the Year going into it, and I knew I wasn't going to – I went the first day of practice to the Cooper River, and while I could catch some better fish down there, you had to fish around for them. I couldn't find a hammer hole or, you know, if they were on, you know, certain things that I could run to catch them all. So I opted to stay in the PD River, which is where I had fished, you know, before both times I'd been there, and, you know, had the opportunities to make the top 35 and to have a lot better finish. You know, I only weighed in 4 fish on the second day, and that, you know, you can't not weigh in limits.
So looking at your goals for 2019, one of them was catch a limit every day. How many days did you not catch a limit for the year?
2
days for the entire year.
That's something else.
Okay.
I think we've made a note of it when somebody has caught almost a limit every single day throughout the season, but I don't know there's very many guys that can say they've,
you know, I think 2018 there was one There's one guy that I know of who caught a limit every day, and it was Scott Rook.
Yeah, we talked about that, and he had that streak going.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. So 2 days?
It's not always the solve all problems kind of deal, because he caught a limit every day but didn't make the classic.
That's right. And you can I don't want to say that you can miss a limit at Winyah Bay, but that's kind of the place where, you know, there's going to be a couple guys that are on them, but the bulk of the field's going to struggle. It's just a difficult fishery. It's very intriguing because you get to see the guts of a lot of guys, how far they're going to run, how much they're going to put on the line. And if you come in with four fish, is that how many you had? Was four that day?
Yeah, I had four.
Yeah, see that? I mean, I don't want to make you feel better or worse, but that's not bad at Winyah Bay. If you're going to do it, that's a good place to do it.
So the next tournament.
But I also had a 5-3 that day.
Oh, wow.
It was first like the first fish I caught. I was like, I got a 5-pounder. All I need is four little guys, and we got 9 pounds. We're good to go.
Wow. So we move on to Texas. After that, the Texas Fest, big event at Lake Fork. And
this is one of my favorite tournaments.
Yeah, you had some great experience covering him. So, sixth place finish there, your second top 10 of the year. At that point, we fished five tournaments, and you've made – no, that's five tournaments. You've made two top 10s. So, sixth place. Thomas, you covered him and one of his roommates at that tournament.
Yeah, well, and look, see, as the season progresses, we had a lot of new anglers this year. Of course, we had a fresh crop of rookies. And Drew leading that class, we were getting to know you at that point, following along, starting to see your stats build. Your season was really getting strong, and I was at a certain point, I can't remember where it was, but was it day two of Texas Fest? I think you and Drew Benton were fishing together, and I said, I have to see what's going on, because unless you're in a walleye tournament, you don't see boats rubbing rails fishing for the same fish. And if you do, there has to be a obviously give and take, you know, or is there a relationship there? Did they both find the fish at the same time? Whatever the story was, I had to go find out. And I did slow down long enough, talked with the both of you guys. Drew let me get in his boat while he was racking him up on that day, which was very nice of you. And the two of you fished together, caught the same fish for a while. Tell us a little bit about that arrangement and how you guys managed to keep that going.
Yeah, so the way that we work is we share everything. You know, we'll break down a lake together, lets us cover more water and lets us see the whole lake, you know. And I mean, this is it's a living, you know, this is how we make a living. So anything that we can do, to help anybody out or either one of us out, we're going to do it. So whenever I found like a shell bar on the first day that was up shallow that was it had a lot of fish on it. Whenever I told Benton that, you know, he started looking for that stuff, and I think we ended up having like I think four of them, and so we just shared them, but they bit in little windows. Like you'd get 10 minutes of, you know, of catching good ones, and then they quit, and you go to another one, you get, you know, another 10 minutes, or you could stay on one and then they wouldn't bite for 15 or 20 minutes and then start biting again. So whichever one they were biting at, that's where we went. So whenever I was actually started right across maybe 150 200 yards from Benton that morning, they weren't biting where I was, and he was railing them. So I went over there to him, finished out my limit, and then we kind of just hopscotched around, and we did that every day, you know. So it wasn't like it, you know, it was just a special thing, and we've done that quite a few times. You know, anything that we don't hold anything back, and it's really hard to do that if you didn't know somebody. Like, you've really got to trust somebody to be able to do that. And the roommates that I have, you know, I can trust them, and so we work together.
Well, and your roommates, Drew Benton and David Mullins, and you and Drew Benton aren't, I don't think you're too far apart geographically with where you both grew up, are you?
No, you know, he lived about an hour or something from me.
When did you meet him?
Ooh,
is it college?
A long time ago.
Both Florida State guys.
Yeah, but he's quite a bit older than me. But we fished team tournaments against each other, you know, ever since I can remember.
At the time of that story that Craig Lamb did, the Bro Series, Drew Cook was 24, I think. Benton was 31. And Mullins maybe was 35, 36, something like that. So it's an interesting age range.
Mullins is older than that, isn't he?
Well, he looks older than that.
60.
It's maturity is what it is.
That's
maturity
right.
Maturity ages a
That's
man.
That's right. Thank
so
you.
So that was a favorite
term. Are
you
sure term. You want to mess with Dave Mullins?
No, I don't. He would hurt me badly. Love you, David. So Texas Fest was a lot of fun. It was a good – you said he finished sixth there?
Finished sixth there, and I think Drew Benton, he was either top 10 or he finished 11 or 12. I can't remember
for sure.
You
guys were pretty close. Yeah. It was a
– Top 10.
Top 10.
It was a good showing for both of you. But moving right along is another – I mean, we kind of took a trip back home for us.
Yeah, we
came
go
to Gunnersville.
We go to Gunnersville, North Alabama, and you finished 25th at Gunnersville. Tell us about that one.
You know, I would like to have the Gunnersville tournament over again, or I'd like to have the Gunnersville practice over again.
Hey, you get that chance coming up in March.
Yeah, you know, I spent the first 2 days of practice idling, you know, looking at the ledges and stuff like that, and I knew it wasn't really happening, but I didn't trust myself, and I kept doing it, and I spent, you know, over half my practice, you know, fooling with that stuff. Finally, the third day of practice, I bailed and, you know, found some grass stuff, and that's what I fished, you know, the whole tournament. So one day of practice, you know, in the grass, and I finished 25th. If I'd have done it for 3 days, then, you know, who knows what I'd have done.
Right, exactly. All right, after that, we head north, and we go up to the legendary St. Lawrence River.
Another one of our favorite fisheries.
Oh, my gosh. It's
always tremendous.
One of the prettiest parts of the country. Mm-hmm. Great fishing.
Giant fish.
So prior to going up there to practice, had you fished there before?
Never seen it.
Okay. All right. Well, we go, you know, for a shallow water sight fisherman, we go up to St. Lawrence River, and you have a 35th place finish there. You do make the cut, 35th place.
Yeah, I would also like to take that third day back there. you know, I feel like I made a rookie mistake at that event. You know, I think I was in like 16th or 18th or something like that going into the third day, and the weights are kind of stacked there. You know, there's a bunch of 4 pound fish there, so it's kind of hard to set yourself apart. But on the third day, you know, I went to go try and catch the you know, if I got 5 bites, catch a, you know, really big bag to move up to have an opportunity to win the event, and didn't really think about the AOI that day. Well, I ended up weighing in like 13 pounds or something that I caught on the way back. But had I done what I'd been doing, you know, caught me, you know, 18, 19 pounds, whatever, stayed in 18th or moved up a little bit, you know, that would have cut my point deficit in half.
Right.
But I gave up over 30 points at that event.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, we stay up north, and but a different kind of fishing. We go to Cayuga, and you have your third top 10 finish of the year, finishing 9th place at Cayuga.
Did you go after the largemouth or the smallmouth in Cayuga?
I didn't care which one bit. But, you know, I went up there kind of chomping at the bits to go to Cayuga. I was, you know, ready to put a big flipping stick in my hand, some braid, and go flip some milfoil and, you know, catch big largemouth. And I was, you know, kind of mad whenever I got there and saw the grass like it was. It wasn't what it normally is. And, you know, I kind of had a pretty rough practice. I had a little deal up shallow that I could maybe catch one day or 2 days worth of fish on it. And then my roommate, we were talking after the second day of practice, and he told me about a crankbait deal. And so the third day of practice, tied on a crankbait, and you know, got on one really good stretch, and that's kind of what, you know, got me to the top 10. I never had to go to my shallow fish, and I honestly, the first day of that event, I knew I had a pretty decent area, but it had been so tough, and everybody, oh God, you know, I don't know if I'm gonna get 5 bites. It's worst I've ever seen it, and I've never been there before, so I didn't know any better. But after about the first 45 minutes of the day, you know, I caught like almost 20 pounds on the first pass. I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna go try to find something for tomorrow. I think I should be up there around that, you know, top 10 stuff. No.
Yeah, and Cayuga surprised us.
20 something.
It really did.
You know, we've been to Cayuga several times. It's a great fishery, and a lot of times it kind of mixes between smallmouth and largemouth, but the largemouth seem to dominate there.
Yeah.
Especially for a northern clearwater fishery.
I think it was the biggest weights we've had there.
The biggest weights. That's right. It was a tremendous event. So you did well. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, 20 pounds on day one puts you in contention, and you kept climbing.
So finish off the year, and we've kind of talked about both of these, Ten Killer and St. Clair, and wrap up your year in seventh place in AOI, first place Rookie of the Year. It's interesting to add up your finishes. So if you take those 10 events and add up your finishes, your average finish for the year was 21st place, 21.2 actually. Mm. And so that's what it takes to finish in seventh in AOI.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So a really, really fantastic year. Congratulations. I know you'd like to have a few of those days back, but who wouldn't, right?
Everybody.
I do have a follow-up question on your roommates, because we know those guys pretty well, too. And we do this series called the Bro Series, where we interview guys who are friends. And this year, probably my favorite one was the one with you three guys, because it was funny as all get out, mainly as you guys were making fun of David Mullins.
Yeah, that is a good part of it.
That was fun. So what's the most annoying habit of your two roommates?
You know, Mullins, he FaceTimes a lot with his dog. And his dog's name's Jake, but he calls him Bud. So anytime we ever get back from, you know, get off the water, well, hey, Bud, and he's talking to his dog on FaceTime.
A man's got to love his dog. That's fair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean.
And Benton.
What does the dog
Mullins,
say back?
And Mullins does this, too. Mullins and Benton really don't use a trash can. You know, they get all their trash and they, you know, they'll put it in an ice bag or something like that, and either it gets in my boat or, you know, Mullins puts it in Benton's or vice versa, or whenever we're staying, you know, at a buddy's house, like at Lanier, every time that he re-spooled all the line that he had, he just hide it somewhere in Trent Palmer's house, and there's no way he's found all of it yet, because it's everywhere.
That's pretty cool. Look, we have a bunch of questions coming in from Facebook. We want to dig into that. Before we do, I have one story we've got to hear. And this is how you've earned your Dave Mercer special nickname. And I want you to tell the story of how why he calls you the Tooth. And then end it with, if you want Dave to look for a different nickname. Although, I'm going to go ahead and vote for it. I like it. But tell us a story about you knocking your teeth out in a fishing tournament.
So, the first tournament of the year, in the opens last year, I was down at Kissimmee practicing. It was, I think, Friday before the event, so like 7 days. And I was flipping mats, set the hook, missed, and 1.25 ounce tungsten came back. Mm. And I must have been smiling or something. Because it knocked my front tooth out, broke my bottom two teeth, and shattered my jawbone.
Oh.
And
Now, that's terrible. That's a really hurtful story, but this gets worse.
Yeah, it gets pretty bad. So I call my dad, and I'm like, hey, I need the dentist number. He's a really close friend. So I call him up and tell him what happened. He's like, well, you know, how bad is it? I was like, I don't know, really. You know, I thought I'd lost two teeth in the front and then, you know, two to the bottom. Didn't really know. So I FaceTimed him and, you know, was putting my phone in my mouth. And he was like, oh, God. It's like, all right.
Wow.
And this was at, you know, probably 6 o'clock on Friday. So he tells me, if you leave now, you know, I can meet you at the office tonight because we've got to get that. Because my nerve was dangling down. So he was like, if you leave now and tonight, we can get the nerve out and grind it down to where you can, you know, deal with it. And I was like, well, I don't really want to, you know, miss any of this practice. So then he was going to meet me halfway to get the nerve out, so I didn't have to deal with that. And I was like, you know, I really need all the time that I can. So then he was going to call me in a prescription to the CVS next to my hotel for the pain. And I was like, well, I can't take any pain pills while I'm fishing, you know, because I can't operate a boat. And then finally he was like, well, screw it then, you know, you're going to be dumb. You got to be tough, I guess. So I fished for, you know, 7 days with a shattered jawbone, lost teeth with a nerve hanging out. Couldn't let the wind hit it. Couldn't really drink. Couldn't really eat. And I ate mashed potatoes for a solid week. And it only took two bone grafts and a couple surgeries and a year later. And
back to a beautiful smile.
Wow.
There are people in our office very disturbed right now. I'm getting texts. So
yeah.
Thanks, Drew.
So where'd you finish at that event?
Third.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I want to tell a quick story. I remember when those photos came in, and I'm like, I kind of heard of you, but I hadn't seen you. And the picture of you smiling with your tooth out, man, that guy looks tough.
He does look tough.
And you know what? You are. I mean, for sure.
Well, so is the tooth a name that you are proud of? You almost have to be.
Yeah, you know, I think any time, if Dave Mercer gives you a nickname, then you're doing something right. So I'm not complaining
at all.
Well,
he took a bullet weight in the teeth. Ounce and a quarter, you said?
An ounce and a quarter tongue.
Probably 100 miles an hour from a flipping stick on short line. Like I said earlier, finger injuries and tooth injuries, I've had enough of this. So we got a bunch of questions, Chris Mitchell. Let's see if we can get through a couple of them. And we're nearing the end of our time space here. In fact, we're about 10 minutes away from cutting this thing off. Drew, you've been awesome, but I know there's a lot of folks that have some questions for you. Chris Mitchell,
what do we got? Let's rapid fire through a few of these. Dale Bird, what do you think about having these three Canadian boys playing in the Elite Series now?
I like them. They're all three really great fishermen. And, you know, they're really good with everything. You know, you saw Chris and Corey both down south, at St. John's River started off. They're some hammers.
They
that's
are.
For sure.
Absolutely. Jonathan Bradford Bailey, what are you looking forward to in 2020?
The Bassmaster Classic, for sure. But, you know, I kind of felt like I left something behind this year, and I need to go back and get it.
So going all the way back to that 2000 Classic that you watched as a kid, now you're going to be walking across that stage.
That was Woo Dave's, by the way. Chris Mitchell found that.
At the 50th anniversary, 50th Classic that we've had. What a cool, cool journey.
Oh, it's going to be really awesome. And to have it on Gunnersville, you know, close enough to my house to have all my friends and family there, it's going to be pretty special.
Is there an Elite next year you're looking forward to as well?
Yes, there's the St. John's, mm-hmm. looking forward to it, and Eufaula, really looking forward to it. It's only about 2 hours from my house, and Santee Cooper. Those three, all of those are circled.
Those are big fish fisheries, too. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an exciting one. More questions.
Sight fishing smackdown.
That's right.
There you go. Steve Donna says, Drew, is it everything you thought it would be?
Everything that I thought and more.
There you go.
You know, I can't complain.
You can't give these guys an inch or an ounce, I guess, in this case, can you?
No. You got to catch them every day because it doesn't matter. They're going to.
Jordan Babcock, what's the hardest part about being on the road so much?
being gone, you know, from my family. I know I've got an awesome fiance that's really supportive. We just got engaged this past year, and you know, I told her, like, I have no backup plan. You know, I'm gonna fish. That's what I, you know, wanted to do, and she said, "Sign me up, let's go."
She's all in on this. It takes a special support system to do this and have someone that you can rely on, who maybe she'll be with you on the road, maybe she's got to work, but to have that support system is critical to being successful at this level.
Oh, for sure.
David's got his dog.
We're gone. Yeah, we're gone a lot. And it's not just the 10 weeks for, you know, for those tournaments. You know, we've got to go to sponsor obligations, you know, all over the place, and it really does take somebody special to deal with it, and I'm glad I found one.
Jim Connor wants to know, what's your favorite lake to fish?
My favorite lake is Lake Hartwell. You know, I really like that place. It was diverse and really good.
Okay, Justin Salisbury, when you're hitting a new body of water for the first time, how do you go about picking where to start practice? Maps, fishing reports, gut instinct, what do you do?
So I, you know, look at, whenever we get our schedule, I look at anything that's ever been there before, whether it be FOW or, you know, bass tournaments, anything like that I can find online. And some places will have an area that you know, statistically wins, you know, and so I focus, you know, half my day and a half in that area, and then I just go do off the wall stuff, what I want to do, try to find something how I like to fish for the day, next day and a half.
We got time for one more question, Chris Mitchell. And
oh boy, Larry Rickman wants to know, what is the best bait in November?
Ooh, best bait in November, I would say, would probably for me be a buzz bait. You know, you love a good buzz bait, but a Sproa Ruku shad is also a really good one.
So you came into this year with goals. Have you set goals for 2020?
I have. You know, my goals for 2020 are to make the Classic. I want to win 2 elite events. And I want to win AOI. So
not too shabby.
That isn't shabby.
That'd be a good year.
That's some good goals.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? This game is full of ups and downs, and you can't get to the top level, not only in your goals, but in fishing in general, if you don't set those goals. And you have a great story about how you did that early on. You worked hard. You persevered. You took a bullet in the teeth, literally and figuratively, and you got your teeth kicked in at a couple events here. I think the tooth is a good name for you, Drew. I like that, and I support that 100%.
I'm pretty good with it.
Well, look, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you, Drew. We wish you the best in 2020. Mm-hmm. We got to start changing how we say things. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being a part of this. We've got some cool stuff going on at Bassmaster.com. First of all, we've got a Fish with Jamie Hartman sweepstakes. He won the Gunnersville event and Cayuga, which we just talked about. And that comes complete with a $40,000 it's a $40,000 total winnings, including a Nitro Z18 bass boat with a Mercury motor. So you can sign up at Bassmaster.com for that. That is pretty cool. And Jim, real briefly, we've got something coming up on the homepage that we're excited about. We've been working tirelessly. We're going to give a little bit of a facelift to Bassmaster.com. You got about 20 seconds.
Yeah, we are. We're making some changes to the website to make it easier to find different types of content, give it a refresh. We're introducing a few different categories, mm-hmm. and I think fans are going to love it. We'll start previewing it late this year.
We're excited about that. Also, we've got a Roku channel. We have other podcasts stored. You can download podcasts via iTunes. You can also do it with your Android device, but you can also view these. What we just did, one a couple weeks ago with the Angler of the Year, Scott Canterbury. That is available on our awesome YouTube channel. It's also stored on our Facebook page. You'll be able to do the same with this one. Thank you to Drew Cook. So make sure you check that out. What else do we got? Hey, if you love other radio shows, Tom Abraham does a great show, Bassmaster Radio, and that's also put into our podcast stream, so you can get that. Tons of videos, lots of great content. And we're also going to be doing a gift guide coming up soon, too, so watch for that. So from Jim Sexton, Chris Mitchell, Drew Cook, this is Inside Bassmaster. Thanks for being here, and we'll catch you here again on another episode. Take care.